Hello, everyone, and hello, Abelito in chat. Why does Anam hate us? The world may never know. But I am one of your hosts, Emelson, and joining me, as always, we have my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And we are back after our one-week hiatus, slightly off schedule. This is a Saturday, for those that are maybe listening after the fact, because real life happens, and I have stuff tomorrow. So we are doing this on a Saturday, but wow, it has been an incredibly eventful couple of weeks. The Race to World First is still going on. It's not something that I expected. So at Warcraft Flux, we had like everybody kind of like just, you know, said when they thought, it's not really a bet because we didn't bet anything, but bet when they thought the Race to World First would end and who would win it. And at this point, everybody had bet that it was going to be over last week. Like, I bet I was one of the late ones, and I said March 22nd. It is now March 26th.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think we were talking about this in the pre-show stuff, but I've never seen a tier go this long. Like, this will go down as, I think right now it's more pulls than Eternal Palace was, which has the previous raid with the most pulls, like the most total pulls across all the bosses. Yeah. It's more pulls than that raid, and then it's, I think, longer progression time than Kill Jaden, which Kill Jaden was the last one that, at least I think, it touched in week three, or Method might have killed it at that time, like right before third reset.
Right.
So it's a very long one, and I guess we'll get into it a little bit, but they are right now. We have Echo and Liquid banging their heads against the Jailer. The Jailer has a secret phase, so secret phases are back. Everyone's excited about that, I think.
It's actually kind of funny because this boss, well, kind of skipping ahead, but this boss would not be killable without having a secret phase, because the secret phase triggers right before you hit Enrage if you meet a DPS check. And it gives you extra time. And if you didn't have that extra time, then they couldn't beat the Enrage. They would need to get 10% more damage.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, the fight is absolutely crazy. And the couple times you've seen Secret Phase has been like almost immediate wipes in terms of those teams. So, but before we jump that far ahead into that topic, I guess let's touch on just progression stuff. How's your progression going over in OE?
It's been going pretty good. We were so close last week to getting Skull X down. We had a 2% wipe. Just wiped really to people eating puddles and, you know, losing all their haste, and then had, you know, pulled a little bit after raid time just because, like, we had a 2% wipe, right? We got to go for it. And just had a very clean pull that was going to be a kill just thrown away by somebody not coming and standing on the group to bait a burrow. And
oh no,
just at 10% with like a minute left, just absolutely devastating. But, you know, we came back in last night, we killed it, so and then we've got like 8 pulls on Dossain now, and it's one of those bosses that as soon as we like don't have everybody die to the Halo mechanic, we will just kill the boss. So probably gonna be a couple pulls tomorrow to get it down.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we had our full night on Dissogne and Skull X was pretty, we got Skull X down on Thursday and then wiped for about 2 hours on Dissogne, and it was similar Halo mechanic. And I think, it's just personal responsibility is not our best trait as a guild, which might hurt us this raid. But we I think our lowest was about in like the 25% range, which is basically going into the third sort of AoE shield phase.
Yeah,
we
bled out a bunch of people and just, you know, pressed on for the sake of seeing their other rings and letting people practice them. Yeah. And like, technically we got to 22%, but there was no way we were going to break the shield. So it might as well have been 100%.
That was basically our couple of pulls that low. So yeah, we'll probably get it next reset. Got a couple more people with 4-piece, so hopefully that makes that damage check a little bit easier.
4-piece check-in. Do you have 4-piece?
I do, yes.
Nice, yes. Nice.
I've had 4-piece since week 2.
Oh, well,
so
fuck you.
I I got very well. Actually, sorry. No, it was. I got it this. No, I got it last week. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I've had it since last week. So second week of Mythic. Like I said, it's week three total. But yeah, no, we I got very lucky. I got three piece actually the first week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was lucky. But yeah, how about you? You have your four piece yet?
No.
No. Do you have two piece at least?
I do have two piece. It's not doing a whole lot because it's just 4% damage reduction, which is like, it's fine. It's not like, you know, you look at the Demo Lock and most of the power of their set is in like their four piece or in their two piece. And it's like, oh, okay. Like it's nothing on that level, or Demon Hunter like getting just insane value from their two piece, and their four piece just like doesn't matter. But yeah, kind of annoying. We are down to, I think, I actually could check our sheet again, but I think it's five people that don't have four piece.
Not bad.
25 player roster. So
yeah, nice. Yeah, we are at, I think we have 28 people and we're down to like four or five people without four piece. Everybody has two piece.
Yeah. The biggest issue now is actually we had two tier bosses this week that we killed on Heroic, where the tokens that dropped were for groups that had 100% of them. So they were just eye level upgrades, or in one case actually completely wasted because everybody had a Heroic one already.
Yeah, that happened in our normal.
Yeah, we may be next week, in order to get people their final pieces, actually like dropping entire tokens. So that we can be like, okay, well, Mystic is all done with Liavim. We're going to pull Liavim with zero Mystic gamers. Like, it's going to be all Zenith, Dreadful, and whatever the other one is. Venerated. Just so we know at least the token is going to get used on somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. And I think the other thing that helped us out to spread these out is we did the whole trade trick, where if you trade the token before you use it.
I regret not doing that. But yeah, we didn't do that.
I think to be fair, like I think it only helped getting maybe one person their four piece this week, in like terms of like being able to like somebody who had like a normal piece being able to trade a Heroic piece. But yeah, it was not. I guess it helped a little bit. But yeah, we did all that, so it was a little more helpful. So
yeah, we talked about doing it. Decided not to bother with it. We are super high probability to have all the four pieces for next week anyway, like just between vault, two more, like we're gonna get another four tier pieces per boss between normal and heroic. So it is like insanely likely, plus you know two more, or we could stack LFR, Liavim, and and Helandros, which we have done. We have 100% done. Yeah,
that's awesome.
We're actually done with Helandros now, so not that one. But like, I had a Zenith stack come do LFR Liavim with me, and we did not get it. Feels bad.
Oh gosh, that's awful. That's awful. Oh man. All right. Well, I guess that's the progress. So yeah. So slowly, we'll see. I mean, we're not to the really hard bosses just yet, but even the current ones are a little.
Yeah. Yep.
Sogne, the Pascal on the rings is sort of a little rough, we'll say.
Yeah, and the cleave. Ooh. Like that cleave mechanic is kind of annoying. I wish the boss would just be better if they didn't have it. Like it would be easier, but it would be better.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, well, we got 2 weeks worth of news, which is hilarious because really only news that we care about happened this week. The week before was nothing but Race for World First stuff. So we haven't missed too much.
Also, the Zulaman amountment. I don't think this is in our notes. I'm going to mention it. Zulaman came out for Burning Crusade.
Oh, that's right. Yes. It's not. My raid leader was complaining about them dropping that for all the work you guys had to do at Warcraft Logs.
Yep. That was my week, was doing Zulaman stuff. But yeah, back to retail now.
Yeah. So first up is Lore, or Josh Allen, I guess, AKA Lore, who was the community manager relations person, or community engagement manager, I guess was his title, is leaving Blizzard. So Lore, you may know as the QA guy. He sat next to Ian, or whoever ends up being all the questions. And sort of did a lot of that, did a bunch of stuff from a community management perspective. So would like interact with different influencers and different streamers and things like that, and sort of set all that up. So Lore is, he was an icon, not an icon, but a very well-known person, even in the community before he started at Blizzard. So
he was one of the OG WoW podcasters. He did like, what was it, Tank Spot?
he did Tank Spot, did the weekly Marmot. I think that's what it was his weekly show. But yeah, did a ton of stuff with Tank Spot. So he's leaving, which sucks because like Lore's was a very good person from all intents and purposes, just a really good dude. Like loved to play the game, really liked WoW, liked working on it. So it sort of sucks that he's leaving, but
he had a few gaffes that probably stand out in the like broader community, like collective memory, but
that's true.
Yeah. He,
the brewmaster one is the one that I think most people,
that was, is it not Lore? That was Celestalon.
Oh, whoops. Wrong player. Okay. Fair enough. I always equate that to him because he did all the Tank Spot stuff. So fair enough.
I'm pretty sure that was Celestalon.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But yeah.
It sucks that he's heading out.
I wonder who's gonna take over the community stuff. It's interesting because while Lore was kind of this manager position with that, he didn't do a lot of direct community interaction outside of the high end, the influencers, that kind of stuff. Like he, as far as I understand, ran a lot of the Discords for those people. Mm-hmm. Like the Blizzard communication Discords for like the high end raiders and the MDI and that kind of thing. But didn't, wasn't really involved in stuff on like the forums or interacting with people on social media or Reddit or anything like that. So,
right. Yeah. I'm
wondering what's going to happen there.
We'll see. I mean, I know that I saw that they had posted his position up a couple like weeks ago.
Really?
So I think it was pretty known that he was leaving. Yeah, and made the decision probably a little bit ago. But yeah, we'll see who replaces him in the World of Warcrafts. So sucks though. Lore's a really good dude. Hopefully he doesn't disappear. Hopefully he still does some stuff either with WoW or gets back into his like podcasting stuff, because I used to listen to that stuff all the time. So
yeah. Or you can listen to our podcast now.
You could. I don't really like listening to myself, but I could, I guess, put it on repeat, pump up those engagement metrics.
Yeah.
So next up, we have some like legendary crafting, and this sort of spread across, I think, a couple different posts or a couple different items. So we did unlock double legendaries. Was it this week, right? It was this week.
It was on Tuesday.
Sorry. I don't know what day it is. So unlocked double legendaries, which meant final campaign quest was done. You got your belt. And then if you were revered with the Enlightened, you also got the memory, meaning you could craft Unity as the legendary power on any piece. So I have a quick question before we jump into this, but did anyone in your raid just think you could equip double legendaries without crafting Unity?
Did not run into that.
Okay. We had an individual who was like confused as to why they couldn't equip two legendaries, and he linked them to me. I was like, you need to craft Unity.
Correct.
So, that happened. I think happened.
Some of it may have been like, we had our pre, tier release round table, like going over plans for the bosses, going over like, okay, here's what we're doing to get people their tier sets. Mm-hmm. And here's what our requirements are. This is the first time we've done this. Here's what our requirements are for you to do for character prep. And our requirements were you get two extra vault slots, like non-raid vault slots, until you have four piece to finish for four piece, basically. And you get revered for the week that the legendary, the second legendary happens, so that you can craft Unity at 291. Even if you're keeping it on the belt, you're going to be able to craft it at 291.
Yeah.
And those are our requirements. So I feel like because we had that specific requirement that people hit revered so that they could recraft it, people knew that they needed to craft that one.
That's fair. Yeah, we didn't have that requirement. So that would have probably helped, I'll say.
Yeah, the normally I'm pretty opposed to like requiring people to do rep. Like we never would have required people to do Korthia or the mob reps, because those were awful, awful grinds. But this one was a joke. Not like a joke in that it was like bad. I guess that's the wrong word. It was simple. It was really nice like we've talked about this before, where like it was just pretty relaxed and that left you with time to go and like do rares or treasures or achievements or protoform synthesis or anything like this in the zone. Oh, yeah. And still have time to get all of your rep stuff done. And it was really nice. Like I hit Revered the weekend before Double Legendaries came out. And I did the one like open the chest world quest every day that week, because that's all I needed in order to hit the rep.
Nice.
And so it was very, very chill. I don't think we had anybody that didn't have the rep requirement. We have one person that didn't, but it's because they joined the team after. So they were coming from behind. But yeah, it was the rep, like
it was super easy.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll ever have a rep requirement like that again, but it was useful this tier and it was easy this tier. So
yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And they've made it even easier, I'll say, from a Blizzard perspective. So they've also, along with this whole legendary crafting thing, they've increased all the Xerath Mortis mats. So any sort of Xerath Mortis specific material now drops in more abundance, which basically means like the legendary, like, so there's a legendary crafting material that's required to make 291 legendaries. I don't know how it was on your server, but on our server at a certain point, those were going for like 25 or 30,000
gold. Yeah, same for us. Yeah.
They are now, I just put one up this morning for like 8K.
Yeah,
they have tanked considerably.
We were basically telling people the guild will cover your legendary if you send us the Progenitor Essentia, because those are the major cost center. Like we've got a bunch of materials that people donated to cover legendary crafting, but of course they couldn't donate Progenitor Essentia in 9.1, so we need those.
Right.
So people sent us those, and we covered their legendaries. But I do think it is funny. There's the complete list of materials that got their drop rates buffed. And it's actually kind of crazy to me. So here's the whole list. Progenitor Essentia, already talked about that. That's the new legendary crafting material. Yep. Heavy Callous Hide. Callous Hide. Like, okay, I'm going to stop right there for a second. You were out for one podcast in like November 2020, and I did a podcast with Peony about the insane crafting costs of leather legendaries, and a lot of it did boil down to callous hides.
Yeah, so expensive.
And they're finally doing something about it. 2 years almost, like a year and a half later, finally doing something about it.
That's so
funny. Okay, moving on. Lightless Silk. Laestrite ore, Alethium ore, Selenium ore, Oxane ore, Phaedrum ore, Sinvir ore. And it's like, wow, that's a lot of ores. But the way that ores worked this expansion, there's one ore type for every zone.
Yep.
So it's just like, it's the blue ore and the green ore.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. So that's, they finally buffed everything. So good on, good on them.
Yeah, this is pretty good for helping control the cost of legendaries. Like,
right.
That's really what it boils down to. Because I was looking at legendaries, and I was like, I could drop 100,000 gold on a 291 ring, or I can wait 5 weeks and hope that it's dropped to where it should be, which is like 40,000 gold.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I bought a ring just because that's the one slot that I can keep the legendary on until I have mythic tier, and then I'll end up moving it to helm. But the ring was only like 80K when I got it, which isn't too bad because at the time, like those progenitor things were like the 20s or 30s. So I was like, not too bad for a ring. So, it was legendary prices, upping the drop rates of at least the mats of craft weren't good. And then the other thing I guess Blizzard did too was they give you something to spend your cosmic flux on, and that is Soul Ash and Soul Cinders. So they basically added an item to the Enlightened, at Honored, I believe.
Yeah.
That allows you to trade in like 3,000 cosmic flux, and they'll give you enough Soul Ash and Soul Cinders to craft a rank 7 legendary base item. So not the, what's the highest rank? 8, right? Or 9? Or 7 the highest rank?
So 7's the highest rank, or sorry, 8's the highest rank. But
gotcha.
The difference between 7 and 8 is just cosmic flux.
Gotcha.
So if you buy this bag, it's actually enough for a rank 8 as well.
Gotcha.
Which is actually also kind of great. People are sick of Torghast because of how they were required to run Torghast in 9.0 and 9.1 in yeah. order to get their stuff. They don't want to run Torghast again to get more stuff, which is like, I was actually just trashing old legendaries in order to craft new ones without having to run Torghast again, which is fine. Like, I don't need my old, like, I trashed my old Kyrian Covenant legendary and my old Night Fae legendary. Oh. And because I have Unity now, I don't need those. And so that covered the cost of making other new legendaries. And that was great. Not everybody can do that, but yeah. that was great. So just in general, this is another really good change of just like, people are sick of Torghast because they are required to do it, and now they no longer have to do it. You can literally get everything just by doing Zeroth Mortis. And Honored is basically free. If you have done the campaign quests up until you yeah. unlock Unity, you're going to have Honored. Yeah. Each campaign quest gives like 500, I think.
Yeah, there's plenty.
And the first one gives like 2,000 or something like that. So it's, you're looking at like almost 5,000 rep just from the campaign quest, if I remember correctly. So doing the weekly even once or twice gets you to Honored.
Yeah, it'll be super, super easy to get all that. So no, that's for sure. So but yeah, so they've added that, which is a great sort of dump for Cosmic Flux. So I think I have at this point like 20,000 of it, 25,000 of it. So
yeah.
I don't need any more legendaries, but it seems like you don't want to do Torghast, you don't have to anymore.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. So next up is basically they are bringing back something that people thought they should have done from the start, which is Mage Tower is going to be permanent starting this reset coming up. So starting March 29th, Mage Tower just is always there, which is like, okay, like what? I don't like why? Like we talked about this when Mage yeah. Tower first came out, and it's like, yeah, just like leave it in, right? Like it becomes less of a requirement and more of a like, hey, I'm bored on a Saturday night and I don't want to like, I don't have a raid or I don't have anything to do. Let me just try yeah. Torghast on a character. Or sorry, Mage Tower on a character, right?
Yeah. It also, it eliminates a lot of, like we talked about piloting when we were talking about that. Like people were doing it in part because they were like, I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to practice this. I don't have time to get this done, but it's going away and I want the skin.
Exactly.
And so they resorted to RMD and or piloting. And if it's just up forever, like it's just here, it doesn't have that issue. And I understand maybe them not wanting to commit to maintaining it for literal ever, but honestly, they don't need to. Like it can stay up from now until 10.0 and it can go away for 10.0 and it can come back in 10.1 when they've got time to get through the 10.0 patch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it doesn't need to be up 100% of the time forever. As long as it's up yeah. for, you know, months and months and months of the time, it can go away for a little bit with, you know, major game changes and then come back once they've got time to clean it up for the new content.
Right. Yeah. 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 No, for sure. They could do all that. So now this will be a great change that I'm excited to at least jump back in and do a little bit in the Mage Tower. So, So cool. And then the other thing they announced this week, which I think we're just going to mention because we have a couple other things we want to talk about, but Blizzard mentioned season 4, which will, you know, we're in season 3 right now of 9.15 or 9.2, right? I guess with yeah. 9.25, they're going to bring out season 4, which interesting. They sort of made a couple announcements. So we'll just quickly touch on it and then we can sort of jump forward, but there's new dungeons being added to the Mythic Plus pool. So basically yep. all the like the mega dungeons from the past, you know, two expansions are going to be in there. So that's Mechagon and Karazhan are coming back along with two community voted dungeons from WoD. So if you want to go out there and vote for the two dungeons you want to be included in the pool for season 4, which will be cool. A couple of little change ups there. And they also announced,
real quick, which two did you vote for?
Grimrail Depot and Everbloom or Evergreen, the whatever.
Yeah,
the,
that one. Yeah. I didn't vote because I've done those dungeons like once because I was, I played casually in WoD and I did not like the dungeons.
But. That's fair. So the I like the train one. So Grimrail Depot is the train one. You're on the train. I think a lot of people hate it. I just think I like it, number one, because it feels like you're on a train. And then they did a whole video about the tech behind how they actually got the train to quote unquote move.
Right.
Which is really interesting. The tech behind it. So I voted for that. And then Everbloom, just because I want to see the crazy skips people do, because that dungeon at a certain point, like when that was meta dungeon to do, like you could skip like literally probably almost 70-80% of the trash.
You
killed like four trash backs throughout the entire thing.
They have fixed a couple of the Everloom skips that people used to do for when it came back for time walking. So like you can go right now and go do time walking Everbloom and it won't, you can't do the stupid like jumping up the hill thing to skip the majority of the trash, which is actually part of the reason that I hated that dungeon back then, because like I was a casual player. And I would queue into Everbloom and people would do these skips. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but what the fuck? And just get left behind. And that was not fun. It's the kind of thing that they will, of course, fix up for, you know, Mythic Plus.
Unfortunately, yes, they will do that. They will do that. So,
But
so we'll talk a little bit more about season 4, probably in another podcast, just because we don't know much other than dungeons.
We don't know much yet.
Oh, the other thing, too, is they're adding in the progenitor affixes to the raids, to all three raids this expansion. So can't wait to go back to Sanctum of Domination and have, like, killing mobs or whatever to get cooldown reduction. I really want to kill Sylvanas again.
Having on Sylvanas actually sounds kind of neat. Like,
I hate that. No.
You don't like
I don't like Sylvanas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fair. That's
like,
fair.
I don't want to go.
I don't mind Sylvanas.
I mean, I think it's to. I guess maybe my point is I don't want to go back and kill anything in Sanctum Domination.
Yeah,
even if it was just Sylvanas, just on principle, I'd go back and do Nathria.
I don't want to spend too much time on this because we honestly have so few details. It's hard to do anything but speculate. But I really hope that it's like a selection of old bosses rather than just the whole raids, because there's like, I don't want to do Fate Scribe or KT again.
Yeah.
Or Remnant, honestly. Like, Remnant was fine once your like damage got to the point that you stopped having the push timers change. But I don't want to do the Eye or Remnant or KT or Fate Scribe or Stone Legion Generals or Council of Blood. I could honestly do without Kael'thas or Innerva as well, although Innerva is kind of whatever. But
Council of Blood. Like, you remember, I love
You remember Innerva? Like it's got the soaks, and then one person misses their soak or steps out because the animation was wonky, and the whole raid dies.
Oh, that was fun. So the fun part about that fight is I didn't get to play that on progression. So like my first time in there, I died, or I probably killed us a bunch because I had no idea what's going on. So like move here, move there, soak, and I'm like what is going on in this fight?
Yeah,
And then it was over, and I was like
But that still leaves like half the bosses, right? Like you could get a pretty solid raid tier by just saying, hey, we're doing this like, I don't know, boss rush kind of thing where it's going to be the highlights of all three tiers from Shadowlands. And yeah, you could call it something like an ultimate fight.
That's true. No, you couldn't call it that because some other shitty MMO calls their fights that.
But like, just take the highlights. Like, you don't need 30 bosses or 31 in this case bosses for a raid tier. That's a lot. You also like don't. So, number one, don't do this. Don't do rotating raid tiers like week to week.
No, please, for the love of no, like
no,
no.
No, imagine like these hard mythic bosses and you just have to take 2 weeks off every time between doing them, even if they're on farm.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they implement it, but we shouldn't speculate anymore. We just don't know much about the season 4 stuff, but it'll be cool once we get a little bit. little more details. We don't
know anything about the plans, about their intended tuning, about what the affixes are, if they're positive or negative or both.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So yeah. So then I guess now it gets into some main topics. So I think we were going to talk about a couple things today, which was, of course, the Race for World First, sort of how that's going, feelings on that. A little bit about some Mistweaver secret tech, we'll say. Which is interesting. And then the Brewmaster four piece and some of the weirdness that we're seeing there. So I guess we'll get into the Race for World First stuff. And I wanted to start us off with actually some Anduin changes, which I think are interesting and probably something we'll start to see elsewhere in the raid. So Anduin this week was pretty heavily nerfed.
This we'll is say. The second round of significant nerfs to Anduin, by the way.
Yeah, so just to give you like highlights, right? Like the Wicked Stars duration has been decreased. That's the
silence duration, yeah.
Yeah, so it's cut in half from 4 to 2 seconds on both normal and heroic. Anduin's Doubt and Anduin's Hope, which are the healing and damage adds in the below phase, had their health reduced by 20% and their movement speed reduced by 20%. So huge amount of nerfs. Very, like, you could feel it. Like, you could probably send one healer down bottom now. Purifying Light damage reduced by 15% on normal damage, or sorry, normal difficulty. So that's the end phase clearing damage that goes off. And then two fun things is fix an issue that caused Empowered Wicked Stars to not damage or silence players. That's a mythic only phase change. And then fix an issue that caused Fragment of Hope to not deal damage properly. The Empowered Wicked Stars change, though, did cause some funness if you raided on Tuesday. I don't know if you heard this.
Yeah, I heard about
normal Anduin was doing mythic mechanics in phase 3, which included
only if you pinned the boss health to 10% in phase 1. Or something like that.
That's true, yeah. But and I guess because we do the speed strat.
We did that too, but we did it on Friday, so the bug was fixed.
Yeah, so that was fun. But yeah, just a ton of just Anduin nerfs. And the reason I bring it up is, I mean, number one, it's just like the heroic version of Anduin now is almost a freebie, right? Like we did the speed strat on heroic this week. Yeah. Meaning like the whole, like, you don't send anybody down in the second phase 1 and you just basically push the boss to 10% before the second intermission.
So
the way it works is you lust first intermission, pump as much damage you can into like the whatever that mob is. And then you just don't send anyone down throughout the entire like phase 2 or like the second up phase. And basically push Anduin before the next intermission. And we did it with plenty of time. Like we had probably 15-20 seconds before. So it wasn't even close. But yeah, the fights are going to be changed, I think, heavily. And I think it's in response to just how difficult some of the later fights are. Difficult they are, but like, how...
So Anduin is hard. Lords of Dread is notably easier than Anduin. Raigalon also kind of hard.
The damage checks for Raigalon, both from a healing perspective and like a DPS perspective, are pretty tight.
Yeah. Actually, while we're on the subject, have you pulled the Jailer at all?
Yeah, we killed him on normal, actually, at the end of our normal clear. Okay. So
we have zero pulls as a guild on the Jailer.
I don't think normal is a good representation of what happened in that fight.
I've done most of normal. Like we hit Enrage in a normal alt run.
Yeah.
We just had like 5 people die to the holes in the ground and just like struggled on and wiped it 2%. It's like, okay, I've seen the fight. Like we don't need the gear. We're not going to bother actually killing it.
Right. Yeah. But no, so I think this sort of is a precursor to a bunch of nerfs we'll see, like as we look at the mythic version of these fights, because like you don't, like at this point you are as powerful as you're going to get as a raid. Like you have your four piece, you have double legendary, you're not gaining.
We have, my raid has about another 10 item levels to go. So like looking at our Skolex kill, I'm going to pull up this neat site called Prog Stats. Looking at our Skolex kill, we started at 263 last week. And then this week we are almost 268. If you look at the world first raiders right now, they are item level 280, almost 276, 277. That is like the raid itself on mythic drops 278 gear. So we still do have another like 10 to 15% power gain just from item level from Mythic. Right. That we haven't seen yet, that we're used to actually seeing a lot of by this point, because usually by week three of Mythic, we're like five plus bosses into
exactly
progression. So we're used to being like, you know, instead of being 267, we would be like 272, 273
right.
in Sanctum or in Castle Nathria. But we're not, because we've killed, you know, two bosses.
Yeah, on Mythic, yeah. Yeah, and I think the funny thing is, though, is that sort of just the output of the fact that like tier sets are so powerful, right? Like yeah. The idea is like we'd have, just between you and I, right, as groups, we'd have more time in Mythic, probably more Mythic bosses down, if it wasn't for the fact that like half of your raid time
in normal, yeah.
Yeah, half of your raid time is spent in normal and heroic, just re-clearing. Maybe half as strong, like at least a quarter, right, at this point is spent going through those.
I mean, we spent 2 hours of our raid yesterday just clearing. We did the final three tier bosses on normal, and we did all the tier bosses on heroic.
Yeah.
And that took us, we wiped to dumb stuff on heroic Regulon a few times, because Dark Eclipse, you know the drill. But that took us about 2 hours. Like, it should have taken us less, because we actually took about 2 hours for a full heroic plus a lot of normal clear last week. But, you know, that's life.
I digress.
I digress. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So I think what we're going to see, and this sort of deals like in with the way that the Race for World First is going, is that like we're going to see, I think, some heavy nerfs to fights like the Jailer, Raga, like anything post like Anduin, right? I think at this point.
Yeah. The only one I could see. The only one I could see them maybe not making like really heavy nerfs to that's post Anduin is Lords of Dread. And that well, I think that depends on how realistic it is to kill the fight without having an insanely stacked comp like they did with like five survival hunters and
full melee ranged.
Yeah. Like if it's not really realistic to kill the fight without just massively abusing the double AoE damage phase, then it's going to get pretty heavy nerfs as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Plus, now that we have pieces as weak aura, the Among Us phase requires no one to talk. That weak aura
is so nice, except if somebody doesn't have it installed and it misses the second person.
That's true. Yeah.
So a note for anybody using that, make sure that everybody has it. Because we had one where, you know, people had uninstalled their voting weak aura. They had put the pieces one in, but one person missed the memo and they were picked for it. And so we got like, it popped up with one of them. So we knew one of the people that was the Dreadlord, but not the other one. So we had to like, okay, hang on, everybody spread out. Like, who's the Dreadlord? Okay. And then do the voting in voice, which was fine. Like, you know, we had time to do it because the other one was already done, but it was a little bit unexpected.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. That weak aura is, it's crazy. I thought it was doing something interesting, but it's really just, there's apparently just a buff that gets put out like immediately. And then, or the buff is on yourself and you can still see hidden auras on yourself. Right.
Kind of to get technical in the way that a lot of WoW stuff is implemented. There's a huge, huge number of permanent hidden buffs and debuffs on your character at all times. They're used for tracking different things with quests and things like that, phasing, all kinds of stuff. And you're not allowed to see them under normal circumstances. And that includes the Dreadlord buff or debuff on Lords of Dread. It's this hidden debuff that goes on the people that are actually the Dreadlords. And there's a new API that was added in 9.2. As I understand it, it was actually added in part because of the World First Raiders complaining about performance issues with stuff like LVUI and Plater. And it was added as basically a more efficient way to list buffs that are on other people. Except they forgot to filter out hidden buffs. So you can use that. Like, they can't just have one person with it that looks at, you know, who's got it, because only in a 25 player raid, like six people are picked to do the mechanic. One person or two people are actually not seeing, or I guess it's always two people. It's the people that are Dreadlords always see the wrong people. So you have to have everybody with it so that you have, you know, at least four people that see the right thing to make the call. But it shows hidden buffs. So that's how it works.
Yeah, that's super interesting. So that makes that phase super easy. I guess the other thing too is, so I guess how much of the race have you been watching?
I watched a bunch up until they started like spending like a week on the jailer.
Yeah.
Which is partially because I was like, I took head like lead on doing a lot of these Willamon stuff at Warcraft Logs, which we, based on the previous announcement that they had posted, we were expecting it to be sometime in April. And then like last Thursday, they announced it was going to be releasing this Thursday. So we had a week to do all the zone support.
Yeah.
And all the different bits of replay maps and all this stuff. And then it still managed to launch in a bugged state because like Blizzard introduced a bug where you will kill a boss and the log says that you wiped. So our site says that you wiped. So now we have to go add manual overrides to determine whether it's a wipe or a kill.
Nice. Fun times.
But yeah, I basically turned off the race once they started doing heavy prog on the jailer, because I was like, I don't really want to see them spending all this time going from like 80% to 20%. And I turned it on yesterday for the first time since.
Yeah.
And honestly, what the fuck is this fight?
Yeah, it's super interesting. Like, I think it's actually kind of cool. There's a ton going on.
It's cool. Yeah, it's very cool. It is.
Like the room is interesting. Like a lot of the movement is interesting. A lot of the abilities that you have to like contend with are cool. Like the whole like soaking puddles and creating lines to heal the boss in the center, heal Azeroth in the center.
Creating the lines was actually a really cool mechanic. I kind of like that. And the room is laid out. If you haven't seen the jailer's room, you should go watch a little bit of the world race, the world first prog, which you can do over at warcraftlogs.com. You can click the little button,
see the page head to head.
But the room is laid out in hexagons, and the way that blood mechanic basically works, you're taking literally the blood of Azeroth, like Azerite, from a puddle and channeling it to Azeroth by building a line of players, and you basically need like one person standing in each hexagon in order to have the spacing right. So it's actually kind of a neat interaction between encounter design and the like play area design.
Yeah, there's like the random holes, like so that these hexagons, some of them are holes, and like there's a bomb mechanic, which is like Maiden, if you remember that fight back in the day, where you have to like, if you have the bomb, you have to jump in the hole and it'll explode and then it'll pop you up and out, and if you don't jump in and it explodes when you're on the platform, it'll just kill everyone. There's a lot of that stuff. There's things you have to soak because the jailer starts to try and kill Azeroth, and you have to like soak it, soak like the beam that he shoots out. So there's a lot of mechanics. I think like you said, like I don't know, like my raid
there's
today,
a huge number of like positioning assignment weak auras. Like they get five of these runes that you're mentioning that you have to drop in the holes, but you can't have two people jump in the same hole.
Exactly.
So you have to, they have this weak aura that like, if you've played pool or billiards, whatever you want to call it,
it looks
and
like
you set up your balls at the start with the little triangle. They've got, it looks like the balls in that triangle. And it just assigns you one of those and you go and you drop in that one. And then there's one where they get a bunch of ads, and the way they're doing it is they have like twice as many ads as they actually have space. So they have assignments for who stacks with whom to drop ads on top of each other to get them packed tightly enough that they can actually do like efficient AoE to them.
Yeah.
It's just, there's like so many different like
so
positioning
crazy.
Assignment weak auras. It reminds me a lot of Ajara in that way, where like the Ajara intermission weak aura just kind of like did the assignments for you on the fly because there was just no reasonable way to actually do the assignments on the fly on Mythic.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of other Ajara vibes I think you get. Like, there's a line of sight mechanic, which isn't huge. It's only in phase one, really, but there's that piece.
That mechanic is more of a screw Demolox We can't think of anything else. Like, have you seen all the clips of the demo locks in both Limit and in Echo? Just like losing their tyrants because a pillar spawns in a spot that they were like there, and then their tyrant like stops casting and walks around. And
some of the pet, yeah, the AI stuff will be is rough. So no, but it's like it's an involved fight. Like there's a lot going on in that fight, which I find crazy. So. But yeah, I think, and the other thing too, is there is finally a secret phase at the end, which we sort of, I don't know if we talked about at the start here, but
yeah,
there is a secret phase where like you get the boss to 10% and then it essentially heals up or like puts on a shield and heals up to like 20%. And you have to go do some end phase crazy stuff, which is like now instead of the ads just dropping AoE, like when you get the circle or when you kill the ads, now they used to just drop like a puddle that would explode. Now it drops a defile puddle. You right. like...
Which, if you're not familiar with Defile, that is something where it's a puddle, and if you get damaged by it, the puddle grows. So if your raid gets ticked by this, you're done. That's it. It's this mechanic actually originally from Arthas in Ice Crown.
Yeah,
I remember many, many memes about people standing in Defile and just wiping the raid. But absolutely... Yeah, I have not watched any of the post, like, reveal, I guess we'll call it, post-reveal progression, because that was this morning. They saw 10% last night. They were in the middle of, like, the jailer does this enrage mechanic where he slowly walks to Azeroth, and he starts this cast, and he just, like, beats the shit out of Azeroth, and then you're dead. And they pushed him to the HP threshold during that cast. And they still wiped, but they got to see the heal start and the shield come up.
Right. Exactly.
And yeah, so. It's wild. It's so yeah, I haven't seen any of the other new mechanics from it, but
yeah. They are now back to like a 10% pull, I think. So they've now lasted 10, like the boss I think heals up to like 24-ish% health. After that, and they've gotten him back down to 10%. So Echo is on a steamrolling train right now through everything. So it's going to be close. I think we talked about this. I think we either see a kill, if not today, definitely tomorrow. And I think if it's not today by either guild, I think Echo gets it early tomorrow before Limit or Liquid wakes up. So I think today's going to be the kill day for Liquid if they have any hope of taking the championship, taking back the belt. So cool. It's been a crazy race. It's been a very long race. I'm actually kind of bored of the race at this point. Well, like I'm like you, like I watched.
It's gone on too long. Yeah. It's gone on too long for everybody. Like I'm sure like you can see the exhaustion if you watch people's streams.
Dude, Max's stream like late at night. If you watch Max like post 10 p.m. Eastern, he just looks destroyed, dude. Like just in terms of like the amount of time they spent working on this, right?
Like, I don't want to get too much into the Twitter drama, but there was a post by one of the people that's like, you know, I don't know, some kind of significant other of one of the World First Raiders complaining about like, this isn't good for their well-being for the race to go on this long. And they're 100% right. There's a bunch of people on Twitter being like, they're doing this themselves. And like, no, this is like 99% just on Blizzard.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Sorry, we didn't mention it, but they actually pushed back MDI. So MDI was supposed to be this weekend, and they pushed it back a week, which I find hilarious because, like, there's two points here. I'm gonna be a little bit upset that they also didn't push back AWC because of this. Because I mean, Mr. World of Warcraft, Trill, the greatest monks ever live, you know, also competes in AWC, so he missed a little bit of progression time there with him. Which sucks. But yeah, they pushed back MDI this weekend because to be fair, like the majority of people who compete in MDI also compete in the race for World First or are in higher end progression guilds that they're not going to take progression time off to do MDI. So
yeah.
That's, people
that
are
in pieces and probably Aster and Skyline, the two like major Chinese guilds that are in the running for high ranks, probably have two or three of the top Chinese MDI teams between the two guilds.
Right, exactly. So they're pushing that back to next weekend, I think, at this point. But yeah, I think they're Blizzard I think Calandra set the tone and Blizzard went with a tuning mentality where they just overcorrected, right? Like, this is a classic Blizzard thing that I think the way that it always works is like something will be undertuned or they'll miss the mark. They will overcorrect that. And then they will slowly get into like an even state. And then eventually what's going to happen is they're going to miss the mark again. And we're going to restart this overcorrection, right?
And actually that has more or less played out this expansion because honestly, the BFA end bosses were pretty well tuned. Nazoth obviously had some issues once people started getting a bunch of corruption, but like progression on Mythic Nazoth for the World First Guild didn't take that long and had to do silly things like Blood DKs wearing cloth gear in order to get Twilight Dev. But it in terms of tuning wasn't that bad. And then Castle Nathria was honestly like incredibly well tuned. And I do think actually a lot of that is that they didn't have all these other external systems. They didn't have domination shards. They didn't have tier pieces and second legendaries and everything that was coming in after the fact. People started Mythic progression with regular ass gear and their one legendary. Yep. And that's it. That's the whole thing. And they tuned, like, Denathrius was just, they didn't nerf that boss. They almost never nerfed that boss. They did a couple of hot fixes to it.
Very
to
late.
They did here's your final push to get your cutting edge nerf a month before 9.1 released. But other than that, they didn't nerf it. The boss that we saw was the same boss that the World First Raiders saw. And obviously we were seeing it with the benefit of like 3 extra eye levels and a whole bunch more.
A ton of gear, yeah.
Yeah. But it was the same boss. The Jailer is not going to be the same boss. Sylvanas was not the same boss. For me at least, the difference is these external systems.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I do like tier sets. I like tier sets a lot. I think the release is the main, the like release schedule methodology, whatever, is the main issue. Like, if you look back at Legion, it was pretty reasonable to just get your 4-piece week one by doing normal heroic LFR, getting your 4-piece, bam, done.
Yeah.
That's like, you have to do, they did massive splits for 2 weeks and still didn't get JPC as 4-piece or something like that.
Yeah, when JPC was like the last set of splits, they finally got it for him. So
yeah,
but yeah, no, it's the race. It'll be interesting to see how the first race of 10.0 goes and how they hit the tuning mark there. Because I mean, yeah, this is just at this point they've already committed, so they can't actually nerf it to make it like quote unquote easy, right? So they sort of just locked in with like, okay, you got to finish the fight out now, and then we'll make changes, you know, in the next couple weeks. So
it really does feel like they overcorrected from like the back 3 bosses in Sanctum being tuned too easy, where, you know, and a lot of that is just like Guardian, there is a way to do it where you just overhealed it and you didn't need to worry about the DPS check because you just healed through extra stuff. And then Fate Scribe, always go left. Just always go left, stuff like that. And then KT, you know, cheesing with the tank trinket and extending the fight.
Yeah, extending it too. So no, it'll be interesting. I wonder how it's going to end. I hope there's a kill today for their sake, I'll say.
Yeah.
Just to sort of hang out. So, all right. Well, we have 2 final topics to cover. We can move forward just a little bit. And I guess we'll start with, I don't know, do you want to start with your Brewmaster one or do you want to start with the Mistweaver one? Because you got
specials. Let's start with the Brewmaster one. So we started getting, you know, whispers of this a couple weeks ago. Basically, the way that the Brewmaster 4-piece works, your Keg Smash does 66% increased damage. Pretty good. Heals you for 66% of damage dealt. Also pretty good. And gives you 66% of damage health dealt as max HP. Also pretty good. So across the board, pretty good. Much better in AoE than in single target because Keg Smash is an AoE ability. But on the whole, like, it's a really real good button. Real good button, even better button with 4-piece and double legendaries. the way that flat max HP works in WoW is really, really awkward with the way that this four piece works. So if you're not familiar with like the actual implementation of max HP bonuses, if you have a percent max HP bonus, when you get it, you go up, you maintain your current like percent, but you have more health. You have, if you get, you know, a rally and you gain 20% health, then if you're at 84% health when that happens, you're at 84% health when the buff is applied. And you're also at 84% health when the buff expires. Now, that's less health when the buff expires and more health when the buff is applied, but it is still keeping you at 84% each time. Flat max HP.
Well, how's this one work?
If you gain 5,000 flat max HP, you also gain 5,000 current HP. That doesn't preserve the percentage. It's basically a heal.
Okay.
It's like working out how much of it is a heal relative to a percent HP buff is like it's not, there's not a simple formula for doing it, but it's effectively healing you.
Right.
When you lose that 5,000, you also lose 5,000 current HP, which is also effectively doing damage to you. And now this hasn't historically been a problem because most max HP buffs are fairly small. You're going to gain 10, maybe 20% of your HP as a max HP buff. You know, you put on a Battlemaster trinket as a DPS. Maybe if you're like undergeared, you get 25% increased max HP while that's up. And it's just flat. So maybe it says, you know, you gain 20,000 health. And then at the end of it, you lose 20,000 health. But that 20,000 health is like, you know, it's probably not going to kill you.
Yeah.
You've got, at this point as a DPS, that's like 20,000 health on a season 3 PvP Battlemaster trinket at max eye level. At, you know, high eye level as a DPS, you probably have 55,000, 60 health now.
Right.
So you're looking at like losing maybe a third of your health when your Battlemaster expires, and you've got plenty of time to plan around that because it's a fixed duration. So the Brewmaster four piece can more than double your health.
That's right. I've seen it. Our Brewmaster with over like 100 and
God, like we have 80, like logs of people hitting like 220k health as Brewmasters where their base health is like 90k.
That's crazy.
So when their buff expires, they lose, you know, 130k health.
They're dead.
And if you're, so what can happen is like you can be at 70% health, you know, or 60% health, very safe because you have 220,000 health. You have so much health. You're very safe. Your buff expires. You have one HP and you die.
So dumb. It's so dumb. It's so stupid.
And it's just, like, it's this interaction of like max HP wasn't a problem when it's smaller quantities. It's because the Brewmaster four piece gives you so much additional max HP that it puts you in the situation where if it drops, it can just get you killed. And like, it's okay. So don't let it drop. Second problem. Keg Smash has a 6 to 7 second cooldown depending on your haste. Effectively, like it's not practical to get it to like a 5 second cooldown. So the buff is 10 seconds long. So you basically have 2 or 3 GCDs to cast Keg Smash and have it land. It has to land. Just casting it's not enough. If you cast it for max range and it takes a second and a half to land and your buff expires, it doesn't matter. You've lost your buff.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So if, for example, you're on Zybox and you have to run away from the boss with the Glyph of Destruction or whatever it's called, and you're out of range of Keg Smash because Keg Smash is only a 15-yard range for 3 seconds or 2 seconds, you lose your buff. Glyph hits you for 60k magic damage. You lose 70k health from your four-piece expiring. You just effectively took 130k damage on and like after your buff expires on a max HP of 90k.
Yeah, you're dead.
You're dead. So the buff duration is part of the problem as well. If they increase the buff duration, honestly, a lot of the issues go away because it's just trivial to maintain the buff at that point. But the 2-3 seconds that you have to refresh the buff is just like, means that you actually run into this a pretty reasonable amount of the time. Like you were talking before the show about your brewmaster for having that happen on Vigilant Guardian this week.
Yeah,
it's like definitely not something that happens all the time, but it's very likely that you're going to have it happen, you know, a few times during progression, and just every time that you just wipe because your tank dies because that 4-piece fucked them over is like, maybe like it's obviously not better to not have the 4-piece. The 4-piece is very good. You want to have the 4-piece, but
yeah,
it's like, well, why now?
Yeah, no,
the final cherry on top. The way that the buff works is you get up to 10 stacks of the max HP increase. The max HP increase is technically scales with your damage that you deal with Keg Smash, which means that if it crits, you get more max HP. But the way that it works with the buff is not exactly how you would expect, because if you crit Keg Smash, it converts your entire buff stack to a crit. It's as if all 10 stacks crit. Which means that critting can net you 40k extra health.
Right.
But then, if you cast Keg Smash and it doesn't crit, it converts your crit stack to a non-crit stack and you lose 40k health. So there's situations, like I have a log where someone cast Keg Smash, it didn't crit, and it was a net loss of 33,000 health.
That's great. And because the stacking, it doesn't matter like the stack position of that crit. It's just the whole stack, isn't it?
The whole stack is either a crit stack or a non-crit stack.
Gotcha. Jesus. Yeah, because like I was saying before the show, our brewmaster on Vigilant Guardian, I guess in his, like when he plays, he saves Keg Smash for Snap Thread on ads they come in.
Right, like, so he lost his buff and they just died.
With Keg Smash up, but like, which the idea would be is like his playstyle was to use Keg Smash for that Snap Threat.
So that's like 100% valid. Like that's how you do keys as well, as you hold Keg Smash. For, like if you know an ad's going to come in or something, you hold Keg Smash and you throw Keg Smash at it so it doesn't go and beat up your DPS. Or God forbid it beats up your healer. So that's totally like valid and correct. But it's extremely dangerous to do with the 4-piece. And it puts you in this really weird situation. So if there's a tank mechanic coming in and you want to keep your crit stack, you're incentivized to delay your Keg Smash to the last second to try and get the mechanic with your crit stack and then push Keg Smash. So that you take it with a crit stack, then maybe it turns into a non-crit stack, but you're safe at that point. And like, you don't need it to be a crit stack in basically any scenario. You don't need to be a crit stack to survive any mechanic. Unless you've like screwed up. So you don't need to do that, but you're incentivized to do it because an extra 40k health is like a pretty nice bonus.
Right. Plus if you're going in, that tank mechanic becomes whatever it is plus 40k because you'll lose the crit stack in there. Right.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Is there any interaction with like, so you just like, the idea would be is like, if you're at, you know, 180 max or 200k like max HP, but you're at 180 relative, like that's your current HP, right? And you lose that crit buff, you basically just drop to 140k HP. Like you just lose that health.
Yeah. Like it doesn't preserve your, so like in that case, like I mentioned, I was looking at, it doesn't preserve percent. So like this person went from like 210,000 health to like 180,000 health, and they went from like 92% health to 88% health, which is like, so losing 5% health is not the end of the world for, especially, you know, as large as the health values that we're talking about are, but it's still like, okay, there's a lot of really weird interactions that come up primarily because of implementation quirks. So it's this crit stack versus non-crit stack thing, plus buff duration. The buff duration, just honestly, there's a couple different things with Brewmaster that if they just increase the buff duration by 10 seconds, the problems go away. Like this and Purified Chi both have that. And then just like the way that max HP, flat max HP increases work.
Right.
So I am hopeful, like honestly, they could change it to just, instead of giving you max HP based on the damage you deal, if it were just like 8% max HP for every stack, just like, just 8%. Basically all of the issues go away. It never like kills you. it gives you basically the same amount of health. There's this, not this crit stack versus non-crit stack thing.
Right. Effectively so the same if they just normalize the HP increase,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So it's
that's a fun thing to find out. I'll tell you, it was very weird when he died on Guardian, because in the logs it's like you're at full HP and then all of a sudden you're at 1 HP and you take one tick of something and die. Because I guess the other thing with Brewmaster is I'm assuming, and I think you may have mentioned this, but if you're at 100% HP and you lose the buff, you stay at 100% HP, right? Like, or no, you don't.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Like the idea is like if you're at 200k HP and you lose the buff and it takes you down to 100k,
then you're still
you lose 100k buff. You're still at 100k.
Yeah, you're
still at
100%. Basically, there's this basically curve of how much your percent HP changes depending on what your current HP is. At 0%, it's still 0%. At 100%, it's still 100%. But in between, you gain and lose different amounts of percent HP.
Which means you're never at 100% HP anyway with Stagger, right? Like, if you're doing any sort of active tanking.
If you're, like, close to 100% HP, it's pretty close to, like, maintaining your percent. But then, in reality, a lot of the time with a set bonus, your healers are going to let you sit at, like, half health. Half health is the worst-case scenario for this. Half health is where you go from 50% HP to 0% HP when your buff expires.
Yeah. That's the scary point. So, like,
That's the scary point. So I guess until they fix this, tell your healers to either let you sit at 10% HP or to sit at 90% HP, not at 50%. 50% is safe until your buff expires and then you're screwed. But the way this looks in logs, if you're trying to look at it, you want to look at the Keg of the Heavens buff. You want to look for when it expires. You can look at some of these death recap, and basically you're looking for their current health to change by a large quantity without actually having a damage event. So, like, for example, I have a log from Kiev. It's a private log, so I'm not going to actually, like, pull it up on stream. But it is, she gets hit by Glyph of Destruction on Zymox. She drops to 60k HP. Then she gets healed by Leech to 2,000 HP. It's like, wait a second. 58,000 HP just disappeared. There's no extra damage event. It's just getting healed there, and her health is gone. That's what it looks like.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's such a weird interaction of like the four P's being so strong, but they're also like this one quirk that is like super dangerous. Like one thing will kill you no matter what. So.
Onion in chat is saying, I can safely say that if I stay alive at 10% health, no healer will heal me. And that is true. That is why my healers don't heal me in keys.
Yeah, they're probably Mistweavers. They're terrible anyway.
Speaking of Mistweavers, you all found some new Mistweaver tech this week.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call it tech, but it was. I guess I'll start off with Blizzard was right about haste scaling on Fallen Order. Even though we said for months or even over a year that we didn't believe them, but we found out basically that there's a weird haste interaction between Fallen Order clones and like the amount of enveloping mist they cast and like your actual haste rating on your character. I think Blizzard has made a couple posts over the past couple of months sort of talking about Fallen Order. Some of the interactions around haste were mentioned. The fact that, hey, now it affects it or now it doesn't, or now we're just going to make them cast two enveloping mists all the time. But basically what we're ending up with, this is sort of the 9.1.5 version of Fallen Order, which contains what Blizzard was saying was some level of haste scaling. We discredited it until we found a very interesting interaction with a bunch of logs around Fallen Order, which is the fact that it does scale with haste, but in a very weird way.
So normally haste scaling, Blizzard has gone to incredible lengths to make haste scaling kind of continuous for most specs.
Correct.
You gain extra dot ticks, but your dot duration is, or you don't gain extra dot ticks, like your dots tick faster, but their cooldown's reduced, their duration's reduced to compensate. So they tick faster, you get more damage in the same time, and you get to cast them sooner, but it's not actually like giving you, there's no like haste breakpoint where you get an extra dot tick, like there used to be back in the day.
Yeah, and they implemented like partial ticks too. So like partial ticks are a thing where like the final tick, if you're in between a haste breakpoint where you won't get a full tick versus no tick, now you get a partial tick, which is just a the amount that it would have ticked if it was, if there was a full tick there. So so Blizzard said for, months,
not continuous for Fallen Order, right?
No, not for, well, it is, but it's weird. So like, but basically what we found out is we, you know, Abbe pulled essentially almost 2000 logs worth of Fallen Order data, did a bunch of math to basically say, okay, this is how many times each clone will cast Enveloping Mist. And there's a very nice sort of scale up from zero haste to about 33% haste, where they will progressively cast more and more until you get to about 2.1 Enveloping Mist per cast. And then as you cross over a haste breakpoint, essentially between 33 and 34% haste, the actual amount of Enveloping Mist cast plummets to like 1.5 or 1.4. Like, off a cliff plummets, which is something that like we never really saw, because while haste was good, haste stacking was never a thing. And I think a lot of folks going into this tier started to look at stacking more and more haste. And yeah, we were able to sort of correlate that, like right around that 33% haste mark, the entire like Fallen Order just breaks in a way we don't understand. Right. Yeah. So like, now that we've sort of found it, we have enough data to sort of accurately state, yes, you want to stack haste up to about, really, I think the guidance is around 28%, because there's some external buffs you can get, like Theotor's T and just other stuff that you want to stay below that.
Yeah,
that'll put you over that. So you want to kind of stay below that if you can.
The one that people were talking about in my guild was Changeling giving you haste. If you have a haste Changeling, you maybe you want to switch that to something else and just have static haste on your gear so that you don't cross over that threshold during Fallen Order.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, we sort of figured that out. Yeah, I guess Abbe in the chat saying like lust doesn't affect it. Yeah. The weird thing is like we would test this with lust, which is like a very easy haste increase, but like, it seems like it's only gear based, right? I wonder like if it's only things on your character.
I wonder if it is. Well, no, because Theotar's T doesn't give haste rating.
It just gives a flat 3%. Yeah. Which is weird, which is why I don't know why bloodlust doesn't.
I wonder if Bloodlust just like puts you enough over the threshold that it fixes itself.
And that's the thing too, is we don't know. We know of the cliff at 33-34%. We don't know if there's another cliff further out. And to be fair, I don't think, at least in the gear for this sort of stretch of the game, we'll ever really meet that next breakpoint, if there is one. But it was, I mean, to be fair, let's eat some hats here on the old Mistweaver team. Like, Blizzard was right. Fallen Order does scale with haste, just in a very, very interesting way. And really just that, So I guess moral of the story is, as a Mistweaver, haste is a solid stat. You'd probably want to stack, not stack it, but get enough of it to be around the 28% mark. And then just chill. Don't get any more. Because if you get more, Fallen Order becomes an awful spell to cast. And we don't know why. Like, there's a, I know that, I think Abbe and Swaggles and some of the other guys were doing some testing around like, well, maybe it's like with Soothing Mist channeling, and like you have to cancel the channel on Soothing Mist, and that'll cast an extra Enveloping, because there's some sort of weird overlap at that haste percentage where Soothing Mist ends just as like you'd be able to cast another Enveloping Mist, but the clone casts Soothing Mist instead. So there's like a spell queuing thing.
Right. Like, that's what I'm wondering. Yeah. It's like a spell queuing issue.
So yeah. And that, but we don't, I mean, we don't really have anything conclusive, I'd say, just because number one, it's trying to talk about pet AI, which isn't very easy to discern. Yeah. But and also just like nothing we've tried so far has fixed the issue other than just being under the haste percentage, right?
Yeah. Which I guess it's worth noting that part of the reason this comes up this tier is that with the higher eye level stuff, it's actually pretty reasonable to just kind of oops into that haste threshold. Like, 33%, you're maybe like, you're not going to be like avoiding haste, but if you're like, haste is pretty good, I'll grab that haste ring, you know.
Yeah,
it's not that hard to I have 34% haste now, and my Fallen Order just got trash canned.
I mean, it's and a lot of the gear too is haste based, so a lot of like the higher eye level pieces are going to have haste on them in the raid, so like you're going to end up equipping just naturally pieces with haste. So I mean, I think at this point it's, there's going to be some sort of, and I think Volk's going to start to update QE Live for all this stuff either today or tomorrow, but there'll be some level of a cap on the amount of haste you have, which will be the first time I've heard of a haste cap in a while, at least in terms of like Mistweaver and like healer stuff, right? There's like weird breakpoints where you're like, oh, you get an extra GCD inside of a buff that you could shoot for, but never anything that's like, hey, you don't want to be over this percentage.
I mean, I know marksmanship in Legion had some haste breakpoints, because of the vulnerability mechanic. You want to hit it like a certain level of haste that with, you know, travel time and things, you could comfortably fit both of your aim shots in the end of the vulnerability window and get your sniper bonus and like that kind of thing. But it wasn't bad to have more. Like, it just wasn't as valuable. It wasn't like net negative in the way that getting 34% haste with this is like actively detrimental.
Yeah. It's essentially you're trolling yourself by having anything above, anything above 33% haste at this point. And to be fair, I would say just as a community thing, and even like my recommendation is going to be to stay fairly under that. Like the extra, that's why I'm saying I think the 28% mark makes sense, because that'll alleviate any need to like, every time you get a new piece of gear, swap like enchants, or like if you get the haste changeling, or if you get the haste Theotar's tea, right? Like changing a bunch of stuff with your gear, staying at 28%, you know, you sit in an area where you can have that stuff proc on you or trigger on you, and you'll be fine. And not go over the threshold. So,
but
that was the fun thing we found this week, which was, we had known about some weirdness just in the logs. Like Abbey had pulled together a way to pull like mass data on this stuff, which is cool. Shout outs to him on that. It was interesting to see, like, we knew like Vigilant Guardian was killing clones, that got fixed. We found out like that was just a weird set of logs we saw. I almost wonder if there'd be more. What
was it? Is it the like exposed core damage killing
the AOE? Yeah, would kill. Yeah. It killed pets too, like other pets too, I think.
Yeah, Skolex would do that as well, actually. And they fixed the Skolex. Yeah. We had I killed somebody's tyrant with Skolex. That was fun.
Nice. But yeah, so we've been able to mark out some of that stuff, which was cool to be able to see in the data. But yeah, this is one of those weird things from like a theorcrafting perspective, which is the other point I wanted to bring up, which like we can do as much individual testing, right? But at a certain point, it's almost like having a large amount of data around a specific mechanic or a specific, thing is always more helpful. I just wishes it was like easier to see this stuff, which I guess Warcraft logs provide us that way. But almost like if there was a way Blizzard could provide us with like a set of information about what they collect on raids, which I know would be difficult, but it'd be cool to see like if it's something they notice or they even see, or if they use Warcraft logs to do their sort of like data analysis, right? Like, I don't know, but
I don't know anything about their internal stuff, but I mean, I've used Warcraft logs like Abe did here in the past to like this is how actually, huh?
Who used it? Abbe?
I did. Abbe?
Oh, Abbe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you said Abe, which is not.
My bad. Yeah. The like there were two different bugs with Brewmaster in BFA. The one where Celestial Fortune was healing you for environmental damage taken, which was fun. We confirmed using Warcraft logs that we found accidentally, and we just like looked up a bunch of different logs. It was like, oh boy, this actually works, and that got fixed. And then Brewmaster, orbs spawning at about almost twice the rate they were supposed to. That one we also found through Warcraft logs. So it's like tried and true tradition of finding bugs with Warcraft logs. Yeah.
And it's one of the, it's just one of those things where you can theorycraft a bunch before something comes out, but you never really get the full picture until you look at the data. So.
Yeah. So, Speaking of, theory crafting versus reality, let's talk a little bit about Night Fae.
Fuck. Okay. What do you want to talk about? This shit's back or shit coming.
So I actually want to talk a little about Brewmaster stuff here. So Brewmaster's in this really awkward position, right? Where basically, in theory, you could play any covenant, and there's pretty much there's arguments for basically any of the four covenants. I think the weakest argument is for Venthyr. Venthyr just doesn't bring stuff to the table in the way that the other ones do. Mm-hmm. Where like Kyrian is just obviously like incredibly good single target damage. It's got file. It's got Mechanicos. It's just good. Necro Ward, pretty good defensively. Fleshcraft is a great button. Mereleth actually is pretty good. There's just a lot going for it on that end. And then there's Night Fae. And Night Fae has had this problem where it's only good in AoE. pretty much, like, it's only good in AoE. But it's also not good in, hasn't historically been good in Mythic Plus because of the fact that you have to stand in your Feyline for it to be good in AoE. And if you have to kite, then you can't stand in your Feyline. And now we're starting to see a bunch of people who are like, well, what if you could actually just face tank the world with your four-piece bonus?
True.
So we're in this situation now in Peak where we're like, you know, you can play Night Fae. We don't think it's going to be the ultimate choice for high keys, but it's definitely like, it's for every tier of Shadowlands. It's been perfectly fine to do for your 15s and 18s and whatever. It's been perfectly fine for that. And it's still kind of like, yeah, it's perfectly fine for that. But as soon as you have to start to kite, it's going to drop off.
Right.
It's so hard to predict whether we're actually going to reach, like, are we going, like, what's going to be the limiting factor on key level this tier? If it's not tank incoming damage and the tank doesn't have to kite, like, Night Fae might actually be, like, a top tier choice. Because we can't predict if we're going to be in a situation where, like, the tank has to kite. Historically, that has been the limiting, like, a limiting factor is, like, the amount of damage your tank is taking. Right. And that is why they kite, because not getting hit at all is the number one damage reduction.
Exactly.
But it's been very interesting because we're like, I don't think this is going to be, you know, the top end meta choice once people actually are getting back into the really high keys because they're going to have to kite. But until you have to kite, like, it's very compelling to play Night Fae and just, like, you have the Night Fae Covenant Legendary is very good when you don't have to pay mana for it.
That's true.
And so you can just, like, it actually has a pretty good interaction with the tier set where the damage increase from the Covenant Legendary increases your Keg Smash damage, which increases the healing and the health you get from it. And then also the percent health increase from Nia also increases the max health that you get from the four piece. So there's stuff going for it, but it still has this problem where as soon as you kite and you can't stand in your Fey line to get resets, it all falls apart.
Yeah.
So as soon as you have to kite, it all falls apart.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I guess from a Brewmaster perspective, I think that makes sense. It's just, I don't know. For any other spec, I just feel like it looks pretty, but.
Yeah. I mean, for PS Weaver, that's got the problem that you just run out of mana.
Well, it's not only that, but like you run out of mana, but like you also, the problem I think there is that like you also like the other covenants are just much easier and like better to use, right? Because like the fun part something about Night Fae, yeah, like with Fallen Order or with Venthyr, right? You basically hit Fallen Order and then you do damage for the remainder of the pull, right? There's no need to micromanage anything. With Night Fae, you have to make sure like you are facing the right direction, you're hitting the people that are there. Like if you have a bunch of range, like if your group is like one tank, you and three range, like Night Fae from a healing perspective does nothing. You're just there to do damage. If you're just there to do damage, like you don't technically, it doesn't matter what your covenant is anyway. Right.
And like this is something, so Kyrian is also something that is, the damage from Kyrian scales with key level because the Kyrian legendary gives you an extra Invoke Niazao and getting three extra stomps is like pretty giga damage when you're taking huge amounts of damage.
Right. Yeah.
It's also in raid easier to play because you just, back in 9.0, I commented on like how much easier it was to play Kyrian in raid because you don't have to figure out like, you don't have any decisions around like, when do I push Phalanx Stomp? Like I Phalanx Stomp proc'd, what do I do? There's no decision making there. Your GCDs, you don't have to, your GCDs are not in contention with one another in the way that they are with Night Fae if you're playing Kyrian, which is actually funny. Lerald was playing Night Fae for a lot of his prototype Pantheon progression because stacked four target AoE where you can't kite. Pretty compelling. And then he switched to Kyrian because he was like, it honestly just wasn't worth the mental energy to play Night Fae. It wasn't better to make up for it.
Also, it's not Night Fae, right? Like, it's just playing anything other than that terrible, terrible covenant. Like, I mean, I meme a little bit about it. I also I think from a Mistweaver perspective, you have a similar sort of idea where, like, you can play Night Fae in your 15s if you want, right? Like, there's not going to be, you're not inting your group by doing it. However, in a raid, you don't play Night Fae unless the fights are short and, like, you're under healing. You just want to do a bunch of healing, right? Like,
yeah,
I think the idea of Night Fae, like, people want to make it's sort of like, what is it? It's sort of like avocado toast, right? Like, if you think about it this way, like, people want to make avocado toast a thing, like the hipster thing to, like, eat avocado toast. Look, you can do it if you want, but really what you want is just a piece of toast and some butter, and you eat that up, all right? Like, you don't need avocados on your toast, too. Night Fae is essentially, well, the avocados are good, though. What's bad? Night Fae are essentially avocados, like, sardines. They're guacamole's delicious. Anyway, Night Fae are like sardines on your pizza, right? Like, you could do it. It's edible. Like, people eat it, but why would you? Like, you just get some cheese, some bacon, you know what I mean? You do it up. So, yeah. So Night Fae players are basically the sardines on pizza, where, like, you could do it, but, like, nobody really likes you. Nobody wants it. But you got those weird people who are like, I eat sardines on my pizza. I'm cool. I'm like, no, you're weird.
Yeah.
Sorry, the avocado toast is a bad example.
The other thing right now for me, at least looking at Night Fae, is, like, I don't have four piece, so I am going to have to kite in, like, I'm doing 20s right now. So I'm going to have to kite because I don't have four piece. So I couldn't realistically play Night Fae. It would be bad for me to do it in a 20 because I'm going to have to run away and I'm going to lose my Feyline Stomp and I'm going to, like, be sad and not get any value from my Covenant. And
exactly.
Alternately, I could just press Weapons of Order and get some extra stomps out and be happy.
Or as a Mistweaver, you could hit Fallen Order. You could hit Bone Dust Brew. You could hit whatever the Bastion one is, Clarity.
Weapons of Order.
Weapons of Order 2. I guess they're all the same name.
Yep.
So, I mean, to be fair, my Night Fae on my monk is literally rank 1 renowned. Like, I started working on ranking
mine up just in case I wanted to play it on. So, Night Fae has seen play on 3 bosses this tier for Brewmaster. It's seen play on Dasein for skipping over rings, which you can also do with Transcendence, which is what I'm doing right now. It's seen play on Zymox, again, for skipping over rings, which I'm doing with Transcendence. So, and it's seen play on Prototype Pantheon for the aforementioned 4-target stacked cleave that you can't kite.
Right.
Reason. So, I went ahead and started. I got my Night Fae up to the point that I have all the Soulbind stuff unlocked. I don't have the, like, empowered conduits and stuff, but I have all the Soulbind stuff unlocked. So it's not a complete troll to play it. But I haven't actually played it in raid because it just hasn't been necessary.
Yeah, my raid leader last night, we were getting to do Dasogne, or however you say that, boss. He was like, can you swap to Night Fae? And I was like, no, I will never be that dumb covenant. Like, I said it out loud in raid. It was great. Felt so empowered. I was like, stupid knight people, I mean, of the trees.
You're a monk. You can just drop Transcendence and teleport across.
Yeah,
just
transcend every one of them. Yeah. 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 So, no, it was, Night Fae, never going to be a thing on Mistweaver. Some people are going to think it is, but it's like the word fetch from Clueless. You know, fetch is never going to be a thing. So, if you've never seen that movie, God, I'm so old.
I have not seen
that. Anyway, let's skip it. Let's cut that out of the podcast. We'll cut that one.
Okay. I'm not actually, but okay. anything else that we want to get to before we wrap things up?
I think that's everything today.
Okay.
Yeah. And then are we on normal schedule next week?
I think we're on normal schedule next week.
Okay, back on normal schedule next week, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we're back. But that was it. So Race Forward First will hopefully be over by then. We'll see. And Night Fae still won't be a thing. Happen.
Like, that's when true. When we hit the third secret phase of the Jailer and, you know, and they're still progressing it next week, you know, I don't want to say anything anymore because who the hell knows? Yeah. Like, when Halandra shows up with a knife for the third Jailer secret phase, all bets are off.
That was the funniest meme where they're like, the secret phase of the Jailer is he just gets down on all fours now and he's just a crab again. And it's like, he's the fight restarts. Oh, God. Yeah, the crab memes.
Yeah. But yeah, okay. That is it for the show today. Thank you all for watching and or listening. We will be back next week at our usual time, which is for reference, Sunday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, to talk about whatever happens. Hopefully we get more season four like details. Yeah, I guess we actually forgot to mention cross-faction stuff is on PTR right now. Big hype about that. But we don't have any information about season four because it's not on PTR yet. But next week, MDI start. More progression. Race to World First probably is over. Lots of stuff happening in the next week. But until then, thank you all for listening. If you have enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that by going over to our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, come join the Discord. It is a great place to hang out and chat, patron or not. Brew Lounge is, of course, actually probably talking about F1 this weekend. Probably not literally today because I think it's tomorrow, but it's
Quali just started, so let me talk about Quali here.
Okay,
That's qualifying for you non F1 fans. Okay,
I mean I figured, but it's probably gonna be F1 Lounge right as soon as somebody kills the jailer. But it is still a good place to hang out and talk shop. But that is it for the show this week. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.